It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
And welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Julie Perkins. This week's Fed Talk will discuss hiring and managing millennials in the federal sector. I'm pleased to say we are joined in the studio today by Kimberly Holden from the Office of Personnel Management, Miguel Aviles from Young Government Leaders, and Neil Reichenberg from the International Public Management Association for Human Resources. Just a reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. So before we get into this discussion, I thought I would allow you all the opportunity to just tell us a little bit about yourselves. So how about we go from left to right? Neil?
Good morning. I'm Neil Reichenberg, Executive Director of the International Public Management Association for Human Resources, IPMAHR. We are a membership association. We focus on public sector human resource management. We've been in existence for 108 years. I have been with the association for 34 years. And my background, I'm an attorney by training.
Good morning, Julie. Thank you for having me. My name is Kimberly Holden, and I am the Deputy Associate Director for Recruitment and Hiring at the Office of Personnel Management. I have responsibility for government-wide recruitment and hiring policy at OPM. I am very pleased to say that I have been with the federal government for 30 years and a very proud public servant, and grew up in the D.C. area, originally from Dayton, Ohio, and have worked with the Department of Labor as well as the Food and Drug Administration in the human resources area, as well as other various management and administrative areas.
All right. Good morning, everybody. My name is Miguel Joey Aviles, and I am representing today Young Government Leaders, and I am the first Chief Learning Officer. So I joined them last year, and we are in the process of developing YEL University, which is a university created by millennials for millennials. So we're having lots of fun. We have over 7,000 members around the United States. And our mission is to get new emerging leaders ahead.
Oh, that's exciting. So for the millennials, I've seen a couple of definitions for it. 84 to 2004, 80 to 2000, is that about right?
Yes.
So they're in their 20s, early 30s.
Correct.
And then I also noticed that it's a huge group,
yes,
larger than the boomers, which mm-hmm. I was surprised to learn because I'm from a smaller generation. I'm from Generation X. And so the boomers have always seemed very large. And I had no idea that an even larger group was coming up behind me. So that's very exciting. But obviously, it comes with its challenges. Again, just from what I have observed and known, I have found that I think this is the generation where there's been a lot of hands-on involvement from the get-go, from their family, from their coaches. Everyone got a trophy kind of, you know, in sports. They didn't slug it out like the rest of us. But so having that... being used to that sort of constant influence and reinforcement, how does that translate into the workforce?
So actually, I hear you when you said about the trophies. When you go back home, I have like 30 on my living room. It's funny. But yeah, actually, we are 80 million strong, and we are transforming the workplace. That's the reality. And when we talk about the federal government, we're bringing new blood into the federal government. We are changing. We want to change policies. We want to create new ways of doing things. And I think that's very positive for our environment. So we are changing the norms. And there is a lot of people with issues about that.
So Kim, how's the federal government dealing with recruiting and keeping them?
Well, I mean, I think to Miguel's point, I mean, I think that this generation is, they come in with an enormous amount of energy, innovation, and they're looking to jump in with both feet and both hands to do things right away and to make change. And within the federal government structure, I think that is actually a good thing. I think that the innovation is definitely needed in order to help transform and move the government to a place where it really needs to be and to prepare for the future. How we're recruiting and retaining this generation, we have to have mentors in place to make sure that they are tending to the care and feeding that this generation needs. They need the structure. They need to be able to know that, okay, this is the path that has been carved out for me, and just give me the independence that I need to go and do, and then come back and give you the result. But they need the structure. They need to know what the end will be, and then they'll be ready to move on to the next project and figure out where they can contribute next. But our recruitment skills and our recruitment tactics have had to change in a way that we're more in using social media to recruit this generation. It's not fill out an 80-page application or too many points and clicks, you know, with your mouse. If I can get to it with one point, one click, then I think that's what satisfies the generation. And they're very tech savvy, so helping to find ways to do things easier is one of the other attributes that they bring to the federal service.
With respect to state and local, how are they recruiting? And I imagine it's in similar ways as the federal sector, or are you taking a different approach?
No, I think there's a lot of similarities government-wide, and I think the issue is a more critical one for government. If you just look at the demographics, you know, the government sector is older than the private sector, and likewise, if you look at the number of younger employees, it's much lower in the government sector. Yes. As compared to the private sector. And we did earlier this year a benchmarking study over the overall heading was talent management. And one of the areas we looked at was millennials recruiting and retaining millennials and, you know, successful strategies. And we had close to 500 organizations across government. Most were local government. That's 70% of our membership. The most beneficial strategies that are being used is to have a social media presence. To recruit, being able to say we provide training opportunities is very appealing to millennials. Using online applications, offering benefits, numbers said that focus on work-life balance, that this is a big issue for the millennial generation, and also maintaining that your website and everything is up to date. I think when millennials in particular look at a government website, if it looks very staid and out of date, it's not going to be something that's a positive recruitment tool for government. And when they ask applicants what's the number one area where they find about opportunities, it is the organization's website. So those are a few things that they're doing.
Kim, as I mentioned to you before, I was struck by the comments made by OPM where it was that you had all these different job opportunities, and you know, you could go be a firefighter, or you could go work in, you know, human resources, or be a lawyer, or be a cop. And then I also read statistics where you guys jump from job to job. My generation did as well, but certainly not to the degree as you, and then you're being managed by people that have been working at the same agency probably for 25, 30 years, because that the boomers pretty much stayed put. So how is that? Is it easy to bring them in, but yet also at the same time you're thinking, well, why invest? They're going to just be moving on.
Well, I mean, I think that for us, I mean, it's a matter of making sure that agencies have programs in place in order to handle the constant moving around. But the one thing that I think that millennials need to understand is that, and that they probably know, that the government offers a wide variety of opportunities in different types of occupations. And just knowing that the type of work that's being done in the private sector, more than likely it's also a need for it in the federal sector. So making sure that there are opportunities like rotation programs that are available, being able to work on different projects, being able to participate in like the President's Management Council rotation program, any types of details that will give a person an opportunity to apply the skills that they have to different opportunities, and then that way learning and building their portfolio.
Okay, it looks like we're headed toward our first break, and you've been listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and we're going to continue on with our discussion after this break and a word from our sponsor.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym. And it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're discussing hiring and managing millennials. Miguel, you had a follow-up comment to what Kim said.
Absolutely. And there is research out there that says that millennials will stay 2 to 3 years max in your organization. The problem with that belief is that because managers know they're going to leave, they do not invest in them. They do not provide training. They do not provide rotational assignments. They do not provide that excitement and that engagement. So they think, well, they're going to leave. Let me take advantage of them and then see you later. And we believe that the expiration date of millennials can be extended. I am a millennial. I have been with the same employer for 7 years. They have been able to engage me, rotational assignments, mentoring programs, leadership developmental assignments. So there are a huge array of strategies that employers can put in place to engage this generation. So organizations have to stop this vicious cycle. They're going to leave, see you later. And there is a way to extend the expiration.
You know, I would agree with what Miguel said, but I think from the perspective of the employer, you know, during the first couple of years of employment, the employer is really investing, and it's in those later years that they see the return on the investment. But I also agree that employers need to recognize that they have to provide opportunities early on and they have to show a career path that will get people to stay longer, that you can progress. See, we did a benchmarking study recently about 2,000 state and local government employees, and that's one of the areas where the public sector really needs to do a better job is to really step up their game in terms of making sure that people feel that there is opportunity for advancement. They're going to be developed, and I think then they're far more likely to stay.
Yeah, and I think that that overall, I think that there are some agents, there are many agencies and many managers that understand that they do need to make that investment. And again, I agree with Neil's point that if I bring you in and you're here with me for the first 1 or 2 years, I'm hoping that that will help set a foundation. But I also know that in order to that, I want to see you advance, that I want to see you sitting in my chair, prepare you to sit in my chair. And so that you need to have the opportunities to go out and learn, you know, other aspects of the organization, other aspects of the business in order to grow.
And Miguel, to that end, isn't YGL partnering with the Senior Executive Association to get those two groups talking?
Yeah, last year we had a very successful year with the Senior Executive Association and YGL mentoring program. We had over 44 senior executives government-wide mentoring over 64 mentees, millennials in the vast majority. And it was a huge success. We had developmental events. We had workshops. We even have happy hours in where both generations exchange ideas and worked together. And what I believe about what we're talking, it's the power of now. No opportunity wasted. And if we want to get into the game, we want to move, we want to learn, we want to provide value. So I think the key word is now.
That's interesting. I'm glad it's been such a success. I thought it was very just a obvious, but yet not done, synergy between you two groups, because I'm sure that they enjoyed meeting the young generation coming up behind them and teaching them the tools of the trade. And I don't know if the state and local have had this issue, but I know that we've all been sort of waiting for the federal sector retirement wave to start. I think it might have been delayed a little bit with the Great Recession. The percentage of the workforce that will be retirement eligible in the next couple of years is rather concerning, I bet, to folks like you, Kim.
Yes, it is. And all the more reason why OPM makes sure that we have programs in place to help build the strength and build the bench strength to prepare leaders that we need to come in and take the place of those of us, soon to be me, who are able to walk out of the door and have a comfortable retirement. And so we have programs in place like the Presidential Management Fellows Program, which, by the way, if I can do a shameless plug, the application period opened on the 1st of October and it closes on the 15th. So anyone who is interested in applying for the PMF program, I encourage you to go to pmf.gov because that is our premier leadership development program. It's a two-year program where it allows persons with advanced degrees to come in and work in a variety of areas across government. And this year, actually last year, we launched our STEM track. And so because we know that there's a focus on STEM occupations and the need for more STEM employees, we have instituted a STEM track, which we've gotten some great success for for the class of 2014. And we're looking forward to more for the class of 2015. But taking advantage of those types of programs that allow a person to come in, get the training, take advantage of the rotations. There's a mandatory requirement for mentoring from the agency, and to take advantage of those programs and grow the leaders that they need for the future.
You know, I think there's been talk for a long time about this silver tsunami that we've never really seen
right.
in the numbers that everyone thought they were going to be. But, you know, one thing, you can delay retirement, but I don't know anyone that's figured out how to delay aging.
Right.
So I really think that organizations need to start to look at it. And I know the public sector overall, from, you know, research that we've done, does not really do a great job on succession planning. There's not a whole lot of focus on it for a variety of reasons. And, you know, it would be great to say, okay, we have people, we know you're going to be retiring in the not too distant future, and let them spend time in sort of knowledge transfer. Let them spend time in mentoring and coaching and developing the newer employees so that they are prepared to step in, take over those roles. They're a talented, bright generation. There's no reason why they can't succeed, but they need to be given the tools and the experience to do that.
And Kim, how is the federal government handling that? They are also doing sort of the slow retirement phasing
Yes.
And mentoring at the same
time. Yes, we have, OPM just recently issued the regulations on phased retirement, which agencies are reviewing and determining what their plans are for implementing phased retirement. So through that program, it allows agencies to think about actually to more implement their knowledge transfer. And so that they have the workers that are ready to walk out of the door, but hold them for a year and have them to start mentor young people or mentor the people that are coming up in the ranks to prepare them to take over those positions.
I think this situation is great for us because in my personal case, in my office, almost everybody is baby boomer, and every month we have a retirement. And I say it's a great opportunity for us because succession planning allows us to learn quick and to move forward. In my personal case, there is a leadership program in my organization. The program manager is retiring in 8 months. So for 8 months, I'll be shadowing him to learn how to run the program. So it's a great opportunity for the millennial generation.
Oh, that's fascinating.
It is.
That seems like it's, how long has that program been in place?
The leadership program has been in place for 3 years now, and I'm a graduate of the leadership program. So I'm now have the opportunity to manage the program due to the succession planning that we are working on.
That's great.
When we were chatting before the show, we were talking about recruitment and how difficult it is, I think, for how poorly the public sector sells itself and talks about the mission and the importance of working for the government. How do you see this? What efforts have been made recently or by your organization to change that, to make it more of an adventure and public service? From what I hear from the millennials, they're all about public service. Mm-hmm. So it would seem like it would be a natural fit.
But I think that what we find is that as I go out in my talks to students and as the director goes out and talks to students in different colleges and universities, a lot of millennials I find are not really aware of the federal government and actually what the mission of a lot of the agencies are. And knowing how tied they are to a cause, I think that it's beneficial for them to educate themselves about the federal agencies. I recently attended a conference for the National Society of Hispanic MBAs, and I sat at a table of energetic young people who had no clue about the federal government. There was one gentleman who sat next to me and talked to me about all of the medical device patent applications that he had gotten approved, but he had never thought that the Food and Drug Administration and the Center for Devices would be an option for him with regard to employment. And they're looking for people with his background in order to review and approve medical device applications. And so I talked to him a lot about understanding what the Health and Human Services Agency does, as well as some of the others that were sitting around the table. So educating them and getting the word out is one thing. And while the government may not be able to compete with salary, we are able, how we compete best is through mission. And our employee viewpoint survey scores, if you will see that in the upper 80s, 80 percentile, that employees who work for the federal government they're driven by the mission, knowing that if they have an opportunity to impact in the life of any American citizen or people abroad, that is what wakes them up in the morning and has them hit that alarm button to get out of the bed to come into work every day. It is the mission, and that's what drives them.
And I would echo what Kim said. In our engagement survey, we found the top two drivers of engagement for state and local employees was feeling a sense of accomplishment and serving the public with integrity. Those are powerful recruitment messages that government needs to get out, and government needs to do a better job of telling citizens about all of the things that they do that improve their lives. And this should be very appealing to the millennial generation.
It is, and young government leaders knows that. So one of our objectives is to go to the community and share the federal message, the government message. And I absolutely agree. Mission drives us. And if you have a mission and we connect with it, we are going to give you our loyalty, our passion, and our time.
I think right now would be a good time to stop here for a break. I want to follow up on that comment after the break. We'll continue the discussion after a word from our sponsor, and you've been listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance, and now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
If you're a federal manager, you deal with a lot of information. Here's a tip on breaking through the noise. Join the Federal Managers Association to have a voice on Capitol Hill. And to get filtered news and information specific to managing your workforce, join the 50,000 other federal managers who already subscribe and read the free weekly e-report, fedmanager.com. I'm Todd Wells, Executive Director of the Federal Managers Association, and I approve this message.
You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I guess I wanted to raise this, what I think should be one of the primary, along with mission, recruitment tools, is I am just astonished at the debt that your generation is graduating from colleges from or trade schools from. It's just, it makes me nervous, and I don't have that debt. So if I was in y'all's shoes, I would talk about loan forgiveness programs or assistance in payment plans. How much is that emphasized? Because I think that if people knew that they were getting some assistance with this crushing debt, and they could sort of see the light at the end of the tunnel on paying it off, maybe I would go for it.
Sure. There are. We do have flexibility for student loan repayment, and the Department of Education also has other programs in place for student loan forgiveness, which with years of service. But those, there are many agencies when, as part of their recruitment tools, they do offer student loan repayment. And so I believe that the amount is up to $60,000 for a year to help pay off student loans. And it's a tool that, you know, a lot of agencies use, and so it is available.
What about down in the state and local level? Do they have the same funding availability to assist?
I've not heard much about student loan repayment programs among our members.
Because I would think that you're going to start off as a starting salary that's not going to be the greatest, because you are going into public sector. And I know now loans are tied to salary and all that, but still, I would just be like, that would be my number one recruiter. Right, Miguel?
I mean, absolutely.
Maybe it's not a lot to you guys, but it just seems like...
It is. Actually, it is. And those are recruitment strategies that federal government can take advantage of. I mean, if we are in a career fair looking for employment, and there is a federal government, hey, by the way, we can pay you your students' loans. Oh, yeah, we will take it.
Yeah, along with the whole public service and mission and all that.
Yes, yes.
But that to me is, that makes
a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah. And then another, you talked about going on to social media for recruitment, and I know the KSAs are they gone or
they're gone?
Yeah. But it still seems to be that you go in when you apply for the public sector, you go into a black hole, and you don't hear anything. You don't know where your application is. I know that happens in the private sector, but it seems the black hole is not as deep. Eventually you'll hear something in the private sector. And I know people that never hear back. It just, you know, it goes into the ether. So how is that being addressed? Because I think that would be very frustrating.
It is frustrating. And I think that, I know that we receive complaints from applicants on a daily basis about the status of their applications and why am I not here? I've applied for 200 jobs and I haven't heard anything. And we, through hiring reform, there are up to three points of communication where agencies are required to communicate to applicants that they've received their application, that they've been found qualified or not qualified or not eligible, and that the status of the position, whether it's been filled or canceled or, you know, just the disposition of the entire position. But we're working with agencies to make sure that they are doing their due diligence as far as communicating with applicants. The issue that is upon us is that agencies are receiving thousands of applications for any one job. And so the volume, and then that communication process is manual. And so it's a human resources specialist pushing the button or drafting the language to send out to literally thousands of applications or applicants for any one position. It's labor intensive. However, it is something that needs to be done. And so we're working with agencies to make sure that they understand their responsibility and that it's, you know, it's part of our commitment to make sure that a person knows the status of their application.
You know, I'm going to show my age here, but in 1979, I applied for a federal job, and being an optimist, I'm still waiting to hear back. I don't rush home every day and run to the mailbox. But I do think that, you know, among our HR members, people always say when they're asked, how long does it take to recruit? And the response of the managers within the organizations is always going to be too long. And I do think the government needs to speed up the process. You know, the private sector can go to job fairs and give an instant offer. But the one cautionary note is that there are occupations within the public sector, such as public safety, mm-hmm. where the hiring process has to take longer. I mean, you need to do your due diligence. If you're going to give people guns, you need to make sure that, you know, you've taken the time, you've done a proper background check. But overall, I think that the government is trying to speed up the hiring process.
And we are looking at, you know, the face of the system, which is USA Jobs, to see what, if anything, can be done through that venue to increase in the notification to applicants. But, you know, I'm aware that there are some private industry companies, once you send your resume in, you may not hear from them. They may tell you thank you, someone will get back to you. So we're still, it's a work in progress, so we're still working on that.
What we hear from our members is just that, and the long process. Not so much about the responses, but how long the vacancy announcement is, and all the things, all the clicks that you mentioned before. It is exhausting for the millennial generation. So that's what we hear all the time, and I think that's one of the reasons we are so underrepresented in the federal government.
And I think in the last few years, public sector, state, local, and federal, you saw the, it used to be there was a certainty to the job being there and a paycheck. And then you saw shutdowns and shedding of state and local jobs by states when they were trimming their budgets. So how are you overcoming, I would be more cautious now. It used to be now. It used to be that you feel somewhat secure and you know the job would be there in some shape or form. But are you getting any feedback on that? Or
I mean, I can say, judging from the numbers of applications that that our systems are receiving, our talent acquisition systems are receiving, that people are still interested in trying to get in, trying to obtain employment in the federal government. So the sequestration and the government shutdown from 2013 has not stopped their interest and stopped them from applying. I mean, we have agencies that within the first hour that an announcement is open, that they're receiving 500, 600, 700 applications within the first couple of hours. So the interest is still there. It's not stopping people from applying. And, you know, so I think that they understand that they see that there is still some security in federal government. I feel that there's still some security in the federal government. I mean, it's just knowing what's coming down the pike, the missions, and, you know, all of the congressional mandates that are coming. We need people to fulfill those missions. We need people to fulfill the digital services missions and the advancement of technology. So we still have to exist. So
I think it has made it a little bit tougher for the state and local sector on the recruitment side. I think it's still seen as a stable place of employment, but that, you know, there are fewer people working, and also there's been cuts in benefit packages, and you know the public sector was always known for more generous benefits, and as those kind of level out with the private sector, I think the public sector is losing a little bit of a competitive edge it might have had there. So I think it's a more challenging environment, but I would agree with Kim. I mean, there's still a lot of people who are looking for jobs out there. I mean, if you look at the unemployment numbers, which I do every month, I mean, I think the actual unemployment rate is about 12% if you look at the sort of labor underutilization rate. And that's a lot of people. And, you know, and certainly the public sector does offer some more stability than private sector.
And that's about applications. But what we hear a lot is that it's regarding engagement. What happened after the shutdown? How do you keep your workforce engaged? And that has been one of the biggest challenges for us, to maintain that level of engagement when that type of situations happen.
Yeah, and I think that's engagement overall. The study that we just did, we found that 47% of state and local employees are fully engaged. And people might say, well, why does engagement matter? Well, from the data we collected, engaged employees are five times more likely to be very satisfied, five times more likely to recommend their employer as a good place to work, and your current employees can be a great recruitment tool for you, and they're four times less likely to leave. So, you know, those are powerful statistics as to why, you know, employers really should focus on how do we engage our workers.
With respect to the millennials, I've also read that, you know, it's all, they love teamwork. They've worked in group projects, I guess, probably from elementary school. You know, that whole everyone gets a trophy thing. And they seem to really think that, like, chain of command is really not, like, they don't have a problem going to the boss. Whereas, Kim's nodding, but so I would imagine that there's a struggle to manage a group that has different expectations of I don't want to say behavior, but how the workforce functions. Are you hearing that from your managers?
We are hearing that from our managers, and I have personally experienced that as a manager. But it's just a matter of, and I'll take the PMF program as an example. We have advanced degree professionals or people that are looking to get into the workforce. They're eager, they're hungry, and they're energized, and they want to come in and they want to make a difference. And they want to do it immediately. But it's just a matter of making sure that the right people are talking to them about the competencies that they need to develop as they progress through the program, and knowing that, you know, it's really not okay that you go above your two bosses to go to the agency head to tell them how you feel about something unless there's an opportunity. But there's a process that will, and knowing that process And understanding that will definitely help you in the long run, and it'll help you as you progress through your career. But making sure that the right person is framing it the right way so that they understand that we're not trying to squelch your innovation and your energy, but there's a time and a place and there's a way to do things. Mm. So it's we are trying to get the message across, you know, so that, you know, that they understand. I had to learn, you know, coming up, you know, an 18-year-old very eager to come in and do a thing, but I understand that I was working for someone and I had to take instruction from someone, and it was going to take time. I will eventually, my hard work will eventually pay off to get me to a seat where I can make decisions and give instruction and have people do things the way that I think that things need to be done. But, you know, it's a process and it takes time.
I know from my experience with clients is that part of the dynamics that lead to lawyers getting involved usually is the generational. Mm-hmm. Or it used to be gender or some other, you know, but I'm finding it now that the younger, there's a frustration amongst the senior managers that they don't know how to handle someone who won't just say, okay, you know. And then it escalates. So I think it's going to be fascinating to watch going forward as the generations try to talk to each other and learn from each other.
Yeah, but I also think that if the agency creates an environment that allows for the open conversation, the open dialogue, and a way to gather ideas from the millennial generation, and then there's a way to do that. And so, again, I'm not trying to say that we don't want to hear from the generation, because I have an open door policy. I have different generations of people that work for me now, and I want to hear their ideas because I don't have all the answers. So I don't want to make it seem like we don't want to welcome their feedback.
And that's why we have a mentoring program. Mm-hmm. And mentoring and coaching are vital in that acculturation.
And I think that feedback, it doesn't matter what generation you are. You know, to me, performance management is very simple. It's a communication tool. Most employees want to do a good job. They need to know two things. What is it you want me to do? And how am I doing? And that feedback needs to be constant. And if you could just up the amount of feedback, I think you could get rid of a lot of sort of the workplace issues. But managers don't want to sit down and say, you know, I have concerns with what you're doing. But if managers are doing their job right, it should be almost on a daily basis that you're talking about what are you working on? What are your priorities? How are you doing? Do you need any assistance to do this?
Yeah, and it's honest feedback. It's open,
right.
And
right.
it's direct, so that if I'm making a mistake, tell me so that I won't make that same mistake again.
Correct.
Okay, I'm going to have to stop right here for our last break, and we'll hear from our sponsor. And when we'll return, we'll wrap up our discussion. And you've been listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym. And it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And we're entering our last segment of the show. And I know we've barely scratched the surface on this topic, but I thought I would give you all an opportunity. Is there an issue, work-life balance? I know, Miguel, we didn't really hit on that, but from what I understand, it's very important. Do you want to briefly talk about how that affects your generation's sort of decision making?
Absolutely. For us, work and life balance comes first. I mean, we are young. We want to have fun. We want to enjoy our time and to make and to be able to have memories in the future. So if you are in your job from 7 to 9 p.m., 8 p.m., that's a problem. And I know that federal sector is pretty good with work and life balance. But when we talk about private sector and other industries, it can be horrible. So that's why the focus on work and life balance is so important. We need to have a life. And there are some other generations that they don't understand that. So,
Kim, you want to tackle that one?
I think Miguel is talking about me. But no, I think that, I mean, I came into the federal government in 1984, and it was 8 to 4:30. Those were your work hours. You took lunch from 12 to 1. Or from 11:30 to 12:30, and it was very regimented. I think that the government has come a long way with applying their various work-life flexibilities, flexible work schedules, ability to allow people to telework or work from home or from the various telework centers, even the child care subsidy programs. We have various benefits packages to help with to allow people to actually achieve some work-life balance. So I think not only is it very important to the millennial generation, I think it's very important to all generations that work in the federal government, because life is more than just about working that 9 to 5 or 8:30 to 5.
Yeah, I would echo that. I have found that the greatest gift I can give to our employees at IPMA HR is the gift of time, and I make a point of giving extra days during the year so people have time to spend with their families or to go off on travel or anything that they choose to. And you know, I commend those who put work-life balance high on their priority list. I don't do a great job of it, although my father had a delicatessen in New York City, and I worked for him from the time I was 12 and I had to be there at 5 o'clock, and if I came in at 5:05, I was greeted with good afternoon. So, you know, for me, work-life balance has only gotten better since then.
And I mean, I think, and when I came in, I watched my father work, and I teased my husband, and he teases me and tells me that if they gave out perfect attendance awards in the government, you would probably get one, because I try to go to work every single day unless I'm sick, and then if I'm sick, I work from home, but I have that flexibility. So, I mean, I think just understanding that. That managers, we need to do a better job at allowing employees to have that flexibility, because it to me, I think that it increases engagement, and it also improves performance to know that you have that type of flexibility. You can better focus, and so that you're not really focusing on other things, but you have time to focus on other on.
And I think technology.
Yes,
this is one area where technology may not be a blessing, it may be a curse, because we're all connected. And the expectations of when responses will be received are heightened. And, you know, how many of us are sort of like the Pavlov dogs when we hear the little beep? We have to get out, or no matter what day it is or time it is, and check who just emailed us or texted us. So, you know, putting away that technology is tough to do.
Absolutely. And for us, it's horrible. Actually, we don't know how to disconnect.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think you're
No, it's impossible. I have an iPad, an iPhone, paper. I have everything in front of me. We want flexibility. If we have the flexibility, we will be checking our email at home or after hours. We will perform if you give us the flexibility.
You know, it was interesting when we were collecting information from the three of you. Miguel was the only one to give his social media Twitter account. And LinkedIn.
And everything, Facebook, Instagram.
We know how to reach you 24/7, right?
Yes, we do.
There's something nice about turning off technology. I highly recommend it,
yes.
Miguel, one
day. I know. I have to work on that.
And I know it's hard to be predictive, but I am curious, how do you think that they will manage as you're seeing them go up into the workforce? With a different sort of attitude about hierarchy and team effort and getting rid of cubicles and bullpens. Do you think they're going to become more like the older generations coveting that corner office, or do you think that they'll stay the course?
I'll let Miguel go first.
Actually, he's eager. This is funny. This is funny because I was reading an article the other day. If your millennial boss is driving you crazy, please read this article. And you know, I'm not a boss yet, but if millennials manage with the now attitude, is going to be a nightmare. We want things now, now, now. So I don't have any research on that, but I know that as we move to managerial roles, it's going to be very interesting.
Mm. Well, I'm glad you said it. Since you're
yeah, I actually agree. I mean, there's times when I want things now, but my expectation is that I know it takes time. But there is one point that I think that that millennials will make good managers, and that is in their ability to bring people together as teams and to be inclusive and to make sure that there is an inclusive workforce. I see that they don't see barriers. And so I think that's a plus for making sure that they are, you know, that they promote teamwork, they promote togetherness, and making sure that they all work together to achieve the goal.
And millennials, I believe, are the most diverse generation mm-hmm. in the history of this mm-hmm. country. And so, you know, and I strongly believe that diversity should be a strength mm-hmm. for organizations. And so I think that they will bring that as they move into the managerial role. Mm-hmm. But I think when you become a manager, there's different pressures than when you're not a manager. And so, you know, there may be some shifting, and some may find mm-hmm. it's not the right role for them, and some may be poor managers, as we see with every generation there.
You'll be looking at whatever the next generation is called, going, God, these kids.
Yeah, it's a stage of life, you know. Some of the things that my parents said about me is what people are saying about the millennials today.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've had a really fun time today, and I hope we were not, or I was not, too condescending about your generation. No. Miguel, I am curious to see how you manage.
Me too.
And as you go up, it will be, hopefully I'll be retired and you'll be.
That's what everybody's saying. Yeah.
Me too. Yeah, we all want to be retired, and we'll just hand it over to you guys, right? I mean, you're a big generation, so you can handle it.
Just keep Social Security solvent.
All right. We'll keep that in mind.
At least while we're here, right?
Right.
All right. So that's all the time we've had for the show today. And I really want to thank my three guests. I don't think I've laughed this much in quite a long time. And I want to thank the audience for joining us. Fed Talk is brought to you by the federal employment law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. And I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend. Yep. And a personal plug to root for the Nationals.
All right.
Go Nats.
Go Nats.
Mike Causey on Federal News Radio.
I would rather give an ostrich a pedicure than play this.
Your turn with Mike Causey, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. only on Federal News Radio. Check out Mike's column, The Federal Report, weekdays at federalnewsradio.com, or sign up to have Mike's daily column delivered directly to your email.
You know, they're probably going to find out in 20 years that carrying one of these in your wallet causes your buttocks to fall off.
Mike Causey on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.